Avodah Zarah, Perek Beis, Mishnah Hey, 2:5. In the previous Mishnah, we had said there's a machlokus between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham regarding cheese that came from Beis Unyaki, a particular place. And since they used potentially idolatrous offerings as the source of their cheese manufacturing, so then, at least according to Rabbi Meir, the whole all cheese from there should be Aser Bahana, forbidden to get any benefit whatsoever from. However, everyone agrees, meaning Rabbi Meir and the Chacham agree that cheese in general, not from that particular place, is forbidden not as an Isser Hana, but just the Isser Achila, prohibited to get, like they're not kosher, you can't eat it. The question is why? And the backstory of this particular Mishnah is a discussion between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Yeshua, where Rabbi Yishmael, who is essentially a junior to Rabbi Yeshua, the Tosefta says that when Rabbi Yeshua was a young man, he was abducted by the Romans, and Rabbi Yehoshua actually redeemed him. Rabbi Yeshua was essentially the Gadol Ador in the beginning of the Yavne period. Rabbi Yishmael was like an up-and-coming, but he wasn't part of the Sanhedrin at the time, presumably, of this Mishnah. Rabbi Yishmael is walking with Rabbi Yehoshua, and he's trying to elicit from him why the rabbis recently made this new innovation where they prohibited Gvinas Akum, cheese that was manufactured by Gentiles. So he's pressing to know why. And as the Mishnah plays itself out, you see Rabbi Yeshua doesn't want to tell him. The reason why he doesn't want to tell him is because as a general principle, the rabbis didn't want to reveal the rationale, the reasons behind their rabbinic gezeiros often, at least for 12 months, that first the new practice should spread amongst the population, and only then they'll reveal the rationale why. The reason why is because if people don't agree with the rationale, they just won't adopt the stricture, and the rabbis wanted certain, you know, rabbinic fencing, gezeiros in place. So here Rabbi Yishmael trying to understand why there's this new prohibition from the rabbis in this year against Gvinas Akum, cheese from Gentiles. Now the basic starting point of his assumption, of his question, is that in the time of the Mishnah, all cheese was made from milk that came from a cow, goat, or sheep. They didn't have the technology in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara to make cheese that wasn't sourced from that kind of milk, and it's really from purely from pure goat or cow or sheep milk. So therefore, his assumption is, listen, what is cheese? Cheese essentially is all milk. There is an enzyme added to it. We'll call that rennet. An enzyme which causes the milk to curdle and become cheese. But ultimately, it's like 99.9% milk or some part of the milk. So since all milk that's used to make cheese comes from kosher animals, and all cheese essentially, except for maybe a tiny minuscule amount, which would be batel, and much more than 60 times against, is just cheese, so is just milk, I should say, in the cheese. So why is cheese not kosher? That's the sort of source of his question. So the Mishnah says, let me actually say one more thing. So what's going to happen is Rabbi Yehoshua is going to give him some essentially incorrect answers, and Rabbi Yishmael is not going to be fooled. But here we go. So it says inside, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says the following story happened. Shal Rabbi Yishmael es Rabbi Yehoshua kishahayu mahalchin baderech. Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Yehoshua were walking along the way, and Rabbi Yishmael started asking questions. Amar lo mipnei ma asu gvina sa'ov de kochavim. Why, asks Rabbi Yehoshua, did the rabbis recently prohibit all cheese that come from of the kochavim, even from Gentiles, even an isra achila, made it not kosher to eat? Amar lo, so Rabbi Yeshua responded, "Bibnei shema'amidin osa bekeva," because they cause it to become cheese, to congeal, with what the Mishra calls to as keva. Now, keva in other contexts refers to one of the chambers in the stomach of a ruminant. What happens is there are multiple sections to the digestive tract of a ruminant. It's more complicated than what you're used to in a person, let's say. But one of them is called the keva, the abomasum in English. And there, milk that, let's say, a suckling calf or a lamb or a kid that nurses from its mother, it's in that chamber, the keva, where the milk gets the enzymes which makes it curdle so that the nursing young animal can digest that milk. So it's from the keva that we obtain the enzymes to make cheese. Now, here in our Mishnah, when it says keva, it's referring not to the actual the organ or the meat, the part of the baby calf, let's call him a calf, but rather talking about what's found in the kava, meaning the congealed milk, which essentially is like a waste product, right? It's like basically like on its way to becoming, you know, poop on the other side. So the thought is that since how would a typical person, a Gentile in this case, make cheese, he would, after slaughtering a baby calf, he would open it up, and from the cava, he would extract some of this, you know, congealed milk stuff, essentially a waste product, right? And then use that to add to milk to cause the milk to curdle. It's the same, it's very similar to what you would use, let's say, for example, take some old dough to make sourdough bread. You take some old dough, which has lots of yeast, and that would be used to ferment the fresh dough. Same kind of idea. So, according to Rabbi Yehoshua, right now he's suggesting that the stuff you find inside of the cava, that congealed milk, curdled milk, is essentially the same halachic status as the animal, the calf itself. Since the calf was slaughtered by Gentiles, it's at all events a nevela, it's not kosher to eat. And he's suggesting that the stuff that's found inside of its cavas also has a status of being a nevela, not kosher to eat. And he's suggesting that since you put not kosher ingredients essentially into the cheese is not kosher. That's the idea. Now, Rabbi Yishmael is going to reject the suggestion that curdled milk inside the nevela calf has the same status as the nevela calf itself, and that it's treif. And his proof is going to be that everyone agrees, bottom line, that the curdled milk that's found inside of an korban ola is not usher to drink midoraisa. Okay? Now, if it were that the curdled milk inside the stomach of the animal had the same halachic status as the animal, since a korban ola, which has been offered as a sacrifice, is totally forbidden to get any benefit whatsoever, which makes it even more chamor, more intensely prohibited than just a nevela, which you can't eat, but you could get benefit from. A korban ola, after it's been offered, is usur bahana altogether. So if everyone agrees you can drink the curdled milk, in theory, that you find inside an ola, that would prove that the curdled milk doesn't have the same halachic status as the animal itself. So that's his argument. Now, the Mishnah is interesting and tricky to read, in as much as he's going to bring an opinion that it's permitted to drink such curdled milk, in a theory, of an ola. And then there'll be a parenthetical comment which is inserted essentially by, let's call it Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the editor of the Mishnah, is going to say, well, not everyone agrees to that, but at least everyone agrees that midoraisa would be mutter to drink. But the other opinion is you cannot drink the liquid you found inside an ola, but that's for rabbinic extension reasons, so people shouldn't get the wrong idea. In any case, since everyone agrees that you could drink it, that would indeed prove that the liquid found inside the stomach of the offering of the animal is not the same status as the animal. And that being the case, there's no reason to say that the milk found inside of a nevela calf is treif. So that would make the cheese that you curdled with it not kosher. That's his objection. Inside, Rabbi Shmuel says, Amar lo. Rabbi Shmuel says back to Rabbi Yehoshua, V'halo. Wait a second. Kevas ola chamura mekevas nevela. The abomasum, that fourth stomach that's inside the calf of an ola, is more strictly restricted than from a regular nevela, regular carcass, because it's asar bahana, like I said, not just asar bachila. And nevertheless, va'amru, they said, there's an opinion of Tanaim Hussein anyways, that a kohen shedato yafa, if you have a Kohen who has like a stomach of steel, and he's the opposite of squeamish, you know? So then, sorfa chaya, he is permitted to drink up that liquid that's found inside the already sacrificed ola, if it was a calf and it has this congealed milk in his stomach. So since it could be drunk, obviously it's not part of the ola because it'd be asur bahana. Now, parenthetical comment of the Mishnah, v'lo hodulo, as it happens, says Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, is, you know, editorial comment, the rabbis didn't agree to this opinion that a kohen could actually drink the milk that's found inside the cave of an ola. Aval amru einenin velo malin. They say even though you can't eat it, but if you do, it's not called me'ila, meaning it's not really midoraisa a violation. It's rabbinic in nature. And therefore, you see everyone agrees that the contents of the stomach doesn't have the same status as the stomach itself, and therefore this excuse, this rationale that was presented by Rabbi Yeshua, that the reason why the rabbis made Gentile cheese, gvinat akum, usur, is because of the concern that you have a treif ingredient, is simply not going to hold water. And therefore, says the Mishnah, Chazar, so Rabbi Yehoshua retract. He takes another attempt of how to explain the rationale for this rabbinic enactment to forbid Venus Akum. Amarlo, he says, Bepnei she'ma'amidin osa bekevas egle avodazara. So his second attempt that he tries to explain to Rabbi Yishmael is the reason why the Gvinas Akum Gentile cheese is forbidden is because we're concerned that the rennet that was used, the enzyme that was used to curdle the milk, came not from a generic carcass of a nevela, but rather it could have come from a calf which was actually offered already as a sacrifice to an idol, in which case the entire calf and everything in it would become forbidden. That is certainly the case if it would be offered. And you know, the pasuk says, "V'lo yidbak b'yadcha ma'uma min acherim." You can't get nothing should cleave to your hand, nothing, no benefit at all from anything associated with a korban. And if indeed an animal was sacrificed as an idolatrous sacrifice, so the person giving it is happy that there's stuff in the intestines and in the stomach which fattens it up, and that's also part of the offering, right? That makes it's part of you're offering the full contents and all its, you know, all the bulk that comes to the animal, which would include, in theory, any liquid inside its stomach, like, so that would be the liquid in the keva. And then it'll be forbidden any mixture that is added to milk, and that, says Rabbi Yeshua, is the reason why Gvinas Akum is forbidden, because of that potential chance of having a sacrificial calf be the source of the rennet. So if that's the case, says Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yishmael says that doesn't add up. Because remember the previous Mishnah we had that there was a machlokus about the cheese that came from the calves from this base Unyaki, that particular place. But everywhere else, everyone agrees that it's only aser b'achila. Everyone agrees the restriction on Gvinas Akum in general is just eating it, not getting any benefit from it. And if it were true that we're concerned there was actually portions of the cheese that contained, you know, elements that came from a idolatrous sacrifice, it would not just be asr b'achila, not just not able to be eaten, but even asr b'hana altogether. And that's not the nature of the gezira. So therefore, obviously, Rabbi Yehoshua, you're trying to pull a fast one over me. That's what he says in so many words. Inside it says, Amar lo, Rabbi Yishmael responded, Im kein, if that were true, so lama lo asrua b'hana? If you're really concerned that the sacrificial elements from an idol inside the cheese, so why wouldn't you forbid it from any benefit? Why would you say it's asr b'achila to eat it? So, kind of checkmate on Rabbi Yehoshua, cannot start Rabbi Yishmael. So what does Rabbi Yehoshua do? He changes the topic. He tries to sort of distract Rabbi Yishmael and therefore stop asking these questions. Says the Mishnah, Heisiu ledavar acher. So he distracts him with a whole new topic. In the end, we'll circle back and explain how the Chachamim understand that this side topic is really like a oblique and indirect way of answering Rabbi Yishmael in part. But on the face of it, we're just going to a different topic. And he says, Amar lo Yishmael achi. He says, listen, my brother Yishmael, even though Rabbi Yishmael was his junior, but now he's sort of treating him as if he were an equal. He says, Heich atak kore. How do you read? How do you pronounce the words? He's going to quote now the second pasuk, the second verse in Shir HaShirim. Okay? The Song of Songs. So in the Shir HaShirim, the second verse says, Yishakeni Minishikos pihu, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Kitovim, and then there's an extra dal dal yud chav sofit, which we pronounce as dodecha miyayin, which would translate kind of literally as, for your love is better than wine. Now, as is well known, Rashi explains it on the spot there. Shir HaShirim is an allegory. It speaks of a love between a man and a woman, and it's allegorical for the love between Hashem, who's the husband, and the woman, who's Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish people collectively. But when the Tanakh is written, there's no vowelation, there's no vowels there. And how to pronounce, how to vowelize, if you will, those letters in the Sefer Tanakh is a matter of tradition, oral tradition. So here we're asking this word, Dalad Dalad Yud Chaf, which is talking about the word love, right? Dodecha, like in El we say Anila Dodi Vadodi Li. Dodi means my beloved. So Dodecha, your love. The question is it to be pronounced Dodecha, and it'll be talking about a male, or Dodayach, your love, and it'll be talking about a female? That's his question. Is this male or female? Now, the first part of the pasuk clearly is talking about, it's Knesset Yisrael, the female, talking to Hashem, the male, because it says, Yishakeni Minashikos Pihu, his mouth. Okay. And Chazal understand, although literally it means let him kiss me with the lips, of the kisses of his mouth, that's metaphorically referring to like revealing to us the request, to reveal to us the secrets of his Torah. The question is, what's the second part saying? Is it saying, Kitovim dodecha miyain, for your love, Hashem, is better than wine to us? Or is it us kind of repeating what Hashem had told us, which is that you told us, Hashem, that kitovim dodayach, you told us that, quote unquote, your love, your feminine love, your love that Hashem gets from us is better to him than wine. Okay? So, although it's not clear how to pronounce it, that's the question. So, says inside the Mishnah, do you say, he says, Heichata korer, Rabbi Yoshua says, Rabbi Shmuel, how do you pronounce those words? Is it kitovim dodecha miyayin? Is it masculine, your love? Or is it, o kitovim dodayach? Or is it, your love feminine is better? Amar lo, Sir Rabbi Shmuel answers to Rabbi Yoshua, kitovim dodayach, it's feminine. Okay? And it's Hashem responding to us, saying that, so to speak, we've been quoted, that Hashem loves our love more than wine, whatever that would be metaphorically. Now, the reason why he says that, ostensibly, is because the first part of the pasuk, it's talking in the third person. It's called Lashon Nistar, third person. Yishakeli Minashikos Pihu, let him kiss me with the kiss of his mouth. So as if he's not there, third person, his mouth, as opposed to your mouth. But the second part, Kitovim, I'll call it Dodayach Miyayin, or Dodecha Miyayin, is second person. So it sounds like a different person speaking, so we're switching. Says Rabbi Shmuel, the first half of the pasuk is the Knesset Yisrael, the female talking to Hashem, the male, so to speak. And now we switch now, and now we go to second person because it's responding, that it's a different talker. It's the Knesset Yisrael talking to Hashem. But, no, Amar lo, he responded back, Rabbi Yoshua responds back to Rabbi Shmuel, no, ain a davar kain. That's not correct. Sherei chavero melamed alav, lareach shmanecha tovim. The latter part of the pasuk, of the next pasuk, the next verse, pasuk gimel, says lareach shmanecha tovim. The scent of your oil is good. Now, the latter part of the pasuk says al kain alamos ahevucha. Now, alamos is like talking about like an unmarried woman, if you will, a basula. So see, the basulos love you. Obviously, the recipient of that love is the Hashem, is the masculine, the male. So therefore, it shows you, says Rabbi Yoshua, that the previous pasuk when it talks about the kitovim dodecha, it's again a male and not female. So okay, that's the discussion there. And that's sort of, he gets distracted. And that's for the end of the Mishnah. Now, the message, if you will, that Rabbi Yehoshua is trying to get across is that the first part of the pasuk, which is talking about Hashem revealing directly his secrets to us, that's the request, right, Yishakeni Minashikos Nepihu. The second part, again, we're saying Kitovim Dodecha Miyayin. We're talking about the ones who love Hashem, that would be the Chacham and their Gezer Sacham, that's better Miyayin, that's preferred than to wine, which is an allusion to the Psukim themselves. Meaning that since the Gezeros Derabbanan are motivated by Yiras Hashem, in a way, they're more beloved than the Psukim themselves. And that being the case, indirectly, Rabbi Yoshua is trying to convey the message, Rabbi Shmuel, that the Rabbanans are very important, more important even than the Doraisas, and you shouldn't ask so many questions, and you should accept the Rabbanan here about the Gvinas Akum, because it's motivated by Yiras Hashem to do the right thing. As a matter of halacha lemaisa, the real reason why the original Gvinas Akum Gezerah came into place is, and which was revealed later on, but not, you know, in this year, if you will, is that we were concerned not of the liquid found inside the Abomasum, I'm going to speak in English so to avoid the confusion in Hebrew, because I'll explain what's confusing in a second, that curdled milk. Rather, we're concerned about taking the abomasum itself, a piece of the actual flesh of that part of the stomach, and then putting that piece of meat, if you will, into the milk to curdle the milk, because the surface of the cava itself also has this rennet, and that's how they'd make cheese. The problem with that is that, of course, the meat itself does have a status of a novella, if it's coming from a non-kosher animal, so it makes the cheese not kosher. Okay, 2 points. The first is, the reason why I said it in English is because while the stomach is called the cava, in our Mishnah, the word cava refers to the liquid found inside the stomach. When we're talking about the cava itself, the actual flesh, it's referred to as or hakava, the skin, the hide, whatever, the skin of the cava of that abomasum. That's one thing. The second thing, and the final thing I want to say is as follows, and it's important to understand what's going on over here, really. We're not concerned about basar b'chalav. It's not meat and milk mixing together, because the quantity of after you take out the piece of meat out of the cheese, which you are going to do, the quantity of, let's call it rennet, that came from the piece of meat is minute compared to the total volume of the milk, way more than 60 to 1. There's no taste perceptible. And for something to be usher because of basar b'chalav, meat and milk together, it needs to be, there needs to be a mixing of the tastes. There's no taste here, so it wouldn't be a problem, okay? Which is why, if you use, in fact, a kosher animal's stomach, or piece of its stomach, like when it had been shechted properly, you could use that. And that's, they did make cheese once upon a time. They actually took a kosher baby calf's stomach, and then they put a piece of that into milk, turn it into cheese, remove the piece of meat, and that cheese is kosher, even though it had meat inside of it, because it's not considered basar b'chalav, because there's no mixture of the tastes of milk and meat. If that's the case, so why is there a problem if you use a novella piece of meat from the stomach and put that in the milk? What's the problem then? Because you're taking it out. The answer is that even though there's no ta'am, even though there's no taste there, there are certain scenarios, a number of scenarios, where the Chazal say, even though you haven't got a perceptible taste of the forbidden thing, in this case the novella, but in certain scenarios where you have what's called a davar hama'amid, I'll translate that as catalyst. When you have a catalyst which makes this food, and the catalyst was not kosher, even though the catalyst has been removed, or its presence is actually, in terms of taste, is non-negligible, it's in percentage terms of tiny, you can't say just butzel and gone, because when you look at this mixture, it's screaming there is a catalyst here, because what was once milk is now cheese. So obviously there's rennet somewhere here, and if the rennet's not kosher, you can't say the rennet's butzel. That's the rationale. It's actually a big machlokas rishonim, but that's how we pass on the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch, Pasuk, the Rambam, Rimigash, that the din is in fact that the Davar Mamed is not batal. And therefore, when you use things like, for example, rennet to make cheese, if the rennet's source is not kosher, then the cheese that made it is not kosher. And bottom line, therefore, that's why even if you rely on what we'll call, quote-unquote, Rav Moshe's Kula, his leniency regarding chalav akum, milk that is not really chalav akum, which came from a factory, and you know it's milked by and the surveillance done by the government, and so on. So many in America, let's say, rely on not eating chalav Yisrael because it's the milk's no concern of being admixture because it's protected. But that would not apply to cheeses. So even if you eat unsupervised milk, you cannot eat unsupervised meat without a proper hashgacha, because it's a separate concern, and it's normal to make the cheeses with not kosher ingredients, including rennet sourced from not kosher animals or not kosherly slaughtered animals.